Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I'd be thrown into anosmia if I got a whiff of the idea that you missed today's show. Remembering the Ice Bucket Challenge. It was the summer of 2014. The Ice Bucket Challenge captured the country's attention for 6 weeks. When it was over, I captured an interview with Barbara Newhouse, CEO of ALS Association, the nonprofit that reaped over 2 million new donors, giving $115 million in that time. To this day, it's recognized as the benchmark for campaign virality. Barbara shared the thrills and demands of ALS's unprecedented, enormous spike in giving. Let's look back. That originally aired October 3rd, 2014. On Tony's Take Two, Nonprofit Radio at NTC. We're sponsored by Pursuant, full-service fundraising, data-driven, and technology-enabled. Tony.ma/Pursuant Radio. By Wegner CPAs, guiding you beyond the numbers, WegnerCPAs.com. And Telos, turning credit card processing into your passive revenue stream. Tony.ma/TonyTelos. Here is remembering the Ice Bucket Challenge. It was recorded as a Google Plus Hangout on air, and in 2014, live streaming had more glitches than it does now. So you're going to hear occasional dropouts, but they're short, and you're not going to lose that much. Here it is.
Hello, and welcome to a special Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, Big Nonprofit Ideas for the Other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I would suffer the embarrassment of scorbutic gingivitis if I had to say the words, you missed today's show. ALS after Ice Bucket Challenge. ALS Association President and CEO Barbara Newhouse is with me. This is her. She's right
Hello?
Here. She's here. She's going to share the thrills and demands of the Ice Bucket Challenge. How is the organization managing that huge spike in donors and dollars? What comes next? We're on a Google Plus Hangout on air, and we very much want your questions. If you are at TonyMartinetti.com, then use Twitter and use the hashtag Nonprofit Radio. If you're on the Chronicle of Philanthropy site, use the comment section. And if you're on Google Plus, use the discussion window. My thanks to the Chronicle of Philanthropy for letting us use their studio in Washington, D.C. Also to the Chronicle's web editor, Cody Schweitzer. He's today's producer. He's on the other side of the cam, but trust me, he's here. Nonprofit Radio is sponsored by Generosity Series. They host multi-charity 5K runs and walks. GenerositySeries.com. I am very excited to welcome Barbara Newhouse to the show. She has led the ALS Association since June. You stepped in it.
I did.
That's incredible.
I did.
She has held senior leadership positions at Alzheimer's Association, Autism Society, and Arthritis Foundation. ALS is at ALSA.org, and on Twitter, they are at ALS Association. Barbara, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Tom.
What is next in your career? Is it the bee diseases?
Well, you know, everybody asks me that.
Bile duct and
next in my career is grandchildren. Grandchildren.
You aspire to grandchildren?
I aspire to have grandchildren.
And your children are aware of your aspirations?
Well, they're not there yet, obviously.
But they're aware.
You've
made them well aware.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm
good luck.
Very much aware, because that's where I'm actually headed, will be retirement, hopefully.
Okay. The association does research, funds research, also does care for patients and support for families and
right.
patients. So let's make sure everybody understands what amyotrophic is.
Amyotrophic lateral sclerosis is a muscular neuro disease which actually impacts all of the muscles throughout the body. Sometimes it starts in the limbs, sometimes a little more rare, but it starts in the throat muscles. But eventually the disease will take over the entire body. A person who has ALS will live anywhere from 2 to 5 on average, although some people do live longer. But for the most part, Once you're diagnosed, it's usually 2 to 5 years, and it will eventually encompass you, your breathing and your ability to eat, obviously.
So it is fatal.
It is fatal.
The latest numbers from the Ice Bucket Challenge, what are those in terms of new donors and dollars raised?
Well, as we wrapped up the Ice Bucket Challenge, we were at 115 million. And that is 2.4 million new donors to our world.
And your total fundraising in 2013 was what, 19?
2013 at the national level, we raised around 21 million. And at the chapter level, they raised another probably 3 million.
Okay. Enormous spike. And 2.4 million donors?
New donors.
New donors came from the challenge.
Right.
What was that like? I'd like to feel the thrills and the, I don't know, maybe even the fears of early July, early August, mid-August. What was that feeling
like? Well, let's just put this in perspective to say that as a brand new person, you know, I was out in the field making my rounds to start meeting people. And toward the end of July, at the very end of July, actually the first week of August, I was in Atlanta, and Carrie Monk, our chief communications officer, had got me on the phone, and she said, "Well, you know, this thing has taken off a bit from that started in Massachusetts with the Ice Bucket Challenge," and I said something to the effect, "You know, we'll probably pick up a couple million, you know, if that kind of thing," and so forth. Well, then I call, and that week I actually was in Atlanta and I was sick. So then that week, and she said, "Oh my gosh," she said, "you're being challenged all over. We've got to get you, you know, you've got to do a video. We've got to get you." And I said, "I can't wait till I come back." "No, we've got to get it done. And, you know, so that's where you're at. That's where we're going
to
do it."
And I'm sick and I have to have ice water thrown.
Yes, and then I got sicker. But at the same time, it was just loading. And you know, you're every day was, "Are you kidding me?"
Yeah.
And we just kept going, and we kept saying to ourselves, because literally all hands were on deck, all across the country in our chapters and at the national office, and you know, we were like going, "All right, you handle this. This person will handle this." And it kept going on like that. And we also kept thinking, "Well, after this weekend, well," then what we found were that as it started to look like it was going to plateau, you'd get to the weekend, and of course, everybody would be getting together with their friends. And the next thing you know is it started going up again. And so it was like, okay. And finally, I said to Carrie, and we were talking about it as a team, and we all thought Labor Day would probably be then about the time that it would probably start to plateau. And really, that's when it started to plateau as kids got back to school and there were other things to focus on.
It came to ALS organically.
Yes.
Which I love. It was not at all, you made it clear, it wasn't planned. You didn't have a communications plan, marketing plan, solicitation, stewardship plan.
No, I did not walk in the door and say, "Today we're going to do Ice Bucket Challenge and we're going to really up the awareness of ALS and we're going to really up the money." No.
So you're not leaving ALS immediately, because you're so marketable now. Anybody would take you in a heartbeat. You're great luck, but you're not leaving.
No, I'm not planning to leave ALS.
But there are different stories about how it came to ALS. Can you set it straight how that worked?
So there are three gentlemen with ALS, Pete Frates, Pat Quinn, and Tony Sinergia. The three guys had been communicating with one another about how they could raise the level of awareness of ALS. And their discussions and so forth, they had started and had seen somebody use an ice bucket on something else. And so they said, "Well, you know, what we really need to do is, it's sort of like the ice bucket, because you know, when people get up in the morning and they splash water on their face, it gives them sort of a wake-up moment. And the guys decided that there needed to be a wake-up call of sorts. And so they really started it, but then it was the Frates family in Massachusetts that then took it real.
Because originally it was for any charity.
Well, yeah.
The idea, I think Matt Lauer did it on television for a hospice care or something. Originally it was for any charity you were close to.
Yeah, I mean, and so these guys just took it to another level, but then it was really Pete Frates and his family that then moved it to sort of the level of the viral nature of it that it could go. And it's went all over the world.
Yeah, I mean, George Bush, Derek Jeter, around his retirement. Yeah. Of course, I mean, everybody knows that.
It's time for a break. Pursuant, their current paper is Demystifying the Donor Journey. 3 weeks ago, I talked about this with Taylor Shanklin, vice president from Pursuant. You don't need the paper, but think of a friend working for a nonprofit, someone who might like help with donor stewardship, help keeping their donors so they don't have to replace them each year, an expensive, time-wasting thing. You got somebody in mind. You have a picture of them. I see them. I see them too. They're holding something. They've got a tablet. And they're scrolling through. Is that a takeout menu? Is that their new printer manual? No. It's Demystifying the Donor Journey. They've got it because you sent it to them. Go to tony.ma/pursuantradio. Send your friend there. Now, back to remembering the Ice Bucket Challenge with Barbara Newhouse.
We, you know, we asked a bunch of, we asked listeners to give us questions in advance, mm-hmm. and we got some. And again, if you're viewing, please either use Twitter, the hashtag Nonprofit Radio, or use the comment section if you're on the Chronicle site, or if you're on Google+, use a discussion window, and because we want your questions, so please participate with us. One of the questions came from Maria Semple, who is the show's monthly prospect research contributor. Mm-hmm. What is ALS doing to segment and cultivate the new growth in donors, the new pool of donors, so that you can identify major gift prospects and then cultivate and steward appropriately?
Right. So what we have done is, well, first of all, we segmented the new donors so that we knew who was at what giving level. And those people that have given $10,000 or more are either receiving a call from me or from Bill Thowet, who is our national board chair, or from Larry Barnett, who chairs our development committee. So the three of us have split those up, and we're actually calling each of those individuals.
That's the 10,000 or over donors.
To thank them for their contributions. The folks that have generously given below 10,000, of course, they've all received, immediately everybody received an acknowledgement. The moment their gift came in, the acknowledgement went out. But then from
let's start with that. That mechanism didn't need to be tweaked because of the volume.
Well, we did have our site crash one entire day.
Oh, okay, yeah.
One day, yeah. But it got back up and running very quickly. But as the whole thing started to kick, I think because of the way that it went, even though it seems like it went very fast to everyone, mm-hmm. we had enough time in there that we were able to tweak our messaging. And Carrie Monk, our chief marketing officer.
You mentioned Carrie twice, a couple times. She's here. She's also behind the cam. Hi, Carrie. Carrie's here.
24/7, I swear that woman was working. But we kept tweaking the messages so that we were ready to go and get those acknowledgments out. Because we didn't want anybody to wait to be thanked. So that's happened. Now it's a matter of doing the cultivating of the donors that were 10,000 and over. Then there is another cultivation level that involves some personalized letters from myself to the next level down of donors that would probably be between the 5 and 10,000. Or actually, it's the $1,000 up.
Thousand to 10,000, we get letters.
Personal letters from me. Okay. And then below that, we've got our team of folks along with our chapter network. We're all working to make sure that all of the donors are thanked those. We also offered online, you had the ability to decide how much information you wanted to continue to have from the ALS Association. So we were honoring those wishes. Some of them wanted to be connected with chapters. Some of them want to be handled, and just deal with research and so be in at the national level. So all of that's going on. We have
met. Let me ask, how many people, or roughly what proportion, didn't want any more information?
Let's see. I would say that it's about 50% said one-time gift, that's it.
Okay.
And then the other 50% are taking a look at exactly what level of involvement.
Different levels of engagement, yeah.
Exactly.
That sort of goes to the slacktivism question, which we'll get to. But so roughly 50%, that's still 1.2 million new donors interested in some level of engagement.
Right.
Okay, yeah, please.
So, but then what we're also doing is we're meeting with a couple of different consultants on some of the strategies that they would think would be appropriate in terms of continuing to move these donors along. And certainly our board is taking a big interest in working on that too. They want some involvement as well. So we are looking at all those strategies and are determining how we best go forth with our new donors. And we're working with our chapters to do that as well.
Yeah, the chapters are important and support for them. And I think we'll have time to get.
Plus because, the reason that becomes extremely important is because, in a federated environment, you tend to knock heads with your national organization. Mm. We don't want to do that with these new donors. So what we want to do is create a strategy that will allow us to collaborate together with our chapters on the stewardship, the cultivation, and even the next ask.
And what does that strategy look like yet? Do you know?
We're still defining. That's still under wraps in terms of how we're defining that. Right now, to be boldly honest, we're at the point where I've got folks working on strategies for how we're going to deal with the new donors, but I have a large part of our team working to prepare for our board meeting in October on taking all the recommendations that we've heard from across the country on how to best use these new dollars. And that's what we're working with.
Okay, and we'll get to that. There was just a press release this week.
Yes.
It was yesterday, I think. Do you foresee, or have you already done a wealth screening of the 1.2 million or some subset?
They're the subset of obviously $1,000 and up. We're working on those wealth screenings. It takes a lot of time to get all of this stuff done.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, of course.
And we're trying to do it. We're trying to do it as quickly as we can so that we can take advantage of opportunities while at the same time not hiring a bunch of new staff, because we know that we know that would not be viewed well by many if we were hiring a bunch of new staff. So,
and plus there's future years that this unprecedented growth is not
right. This is an anomaly.
Not going to be sustained. So
exactly.
That would, I could see. I mean, that would make things difficult for future years.
Right.
Okay. Let's talk a little about the any questions, Cody, yet? Any questions?
Yeah, talking about that operations staff, I do have one question from Niley, who says, there's been some discussion after the challenge ended about how much of the donation would go to research versus operational expenses, which you've addressed a little bit. Can you share what the breakdown is for that?
We don't have the breakdown yet. I can tell you this, a significant percentage of the dollars will go to research. But I cannot give you the breakdown yet of how much is going to research, how much to care services, how much to public policy. And I would say, when you look at that piece, it's going to be how much is mission, how much is going to impact mission. And we don't have that total percentage yet. We know it's significant on the research front. We're still trying to sort through the other recommendations. but it's, you know, it's not our intention to take and turn our organization into a top heavy organization because of these dollars. That is not at all where we're headed. We want to use these dollars to find an effective treatment and ultimately a cure.
And there was just the press release yesterday.
Yes.
That you're spending over $21 million.
Yeah. $21 to $22 million and again, that is looking at the system of mission impact. So if we start with the patient or the person with ALS, living with ALS, usually is seen by one of the ALS clinics or centers. And so we announced yesterday, because what they learn in those centers then spins off as to what's happening with clinical trials and drug therapies, as well as other research. So we announced yesterday that we would be spending on 43, that each of the 43 centers will be receiving $25,000 each, which is an increase from $12,500. So then if you look at it in that system and you go from there, then we know that we've got several research projects that we're looking at. New York City at the New York Genome Center, where they are looking at a pipeline on ALS to study genes there. Secondly is a project called Project Mind, which is actually working with global researchers on gene sequencing. Third is a neuro collaborative out, which is on the West Coast, involving Cedars-Sinai and some other of the researchers there. And that will be looking at the drug therapy pipeline. And the fourth one is a biotherapy study that's going on at MGH. So again, what we did is we chose those four research projects because it tied into what we were hearing from the community, the ALS community, and they were four projects that allowed us to leverage them with some, with a couple of donors who wish to remain anonymous, but who said, if you are all willing to put this in, we will match this. So it's going to make the dollars from the Ice Bucket Challenge go further. So that's that piece. Then another thing that it feeds and influences everything that we do in research, particularly on the drug therapy pipeline, is certainly FDA. And so we are...
There's only one drug now, right?
There's only one drug
for ALS treatment.
Right. And it's not... Well, anyway, there's only one drug. But what we know is that even with a drug in the pipeline, it can get caught up in a while in FDA processes. So modeling after what we saw with another organization who did something similar, we are now creating an FDA consortium so that we can do everything we can to help prepare, to help move it through more quickly through the FDA process. And so again, that's out of the advocacy and public policy arena that we're doing that. So essentially what that does is tie our system together. And it comes between 21 to 22 million, and then we'll take it from there when we go meet with our board in October.
A question came from Angela Seaworth on the Facebook page. How much will you reserve to invest in development and marketing over the next 5 years to grow?
You know, that's a good question. I wish I had the answer to that today. Actually, just before we came over here, we met with the PR firm that we work with, and we were talking about the strategies. First of all, even before we get there,
let us in the back door.
What we've got to do is we've got to define what the new norm for the ALS Association is. You know, if you're at a budget nationally of roughly 21 million, and you were spending roughly 7 million of that in research, now we've got to take a look at what's our new norm going to be. So we've got to figure out some of these other parts in terms of looking at our new norm. And then it's a matter of, all right, what investments are we going to, if our new norm goes from 21 million to around 40 million a year, what are the investments we need to make on the development side to keep, to be able to keep that level? And what do we need to do on the marketing, the awareness side, to continue on concern for ALS and awareness of the ALS Association? So it's looking at those kinds of things. And right now we're studying and we're taking a look at a lot of different models so that as the decision-making process moves forward and we develop what that new norm looks like, that we can then determine what we're going to need in both development and marketing to sustain that.
Isn't there an advisory panel, excuse me, that you've put together to try to figure out how these different needs can should be met?
No, not that. That's not what that advisory panel. I have a panel of ALS advisors who has been working and talking with me around the recommendations as people with ALS have
on the mission impact front. All right.
On the side that I'm just referring to, we have a couple of different consultants that we're using to work with us. And also, of course, our board is very much involved in this piece.
What is the ALS endowment? Is there?
We don't have an endowment, and we're not going to have an endowment.
Oh, you don't. That's what I was going to ask.
Okay.
Do you foresee? Well, I thought.
Yeah. No.
I'll start with what you have, but there isn't.
We don't have an endowment, and I don't foresee us having an endowment because I believe, and I firmly believe this, that as a voluntary health agency, our job is to solve the issue we need to solve and be done with it. And endowments have their place, but I don't happen. It's my personal belief that it does not belong in the disease space when you're working hard to put yourself out of business.
Another question came from Amy Sample Ward, who is our monthly social media contributor, and she's also the CEO of N10, the Nonprofit Technology Network. And so she's getting to the chapter support, knowing that donations weren't made only to the national ALS, knowledge and systems readiness may be different chapter to chapter, so different chapters have different capabilities, but they still need to be able to report and tell stories and cultivate donors. So what's in place or what would be in place to help support the local chapter in ensuring follow-up with their donors, communications, and retaining?
Well, actually, I think our chapter network is more sophisticated than what some people might think. But, they're doing a good job of following up with the donors that came directly to them out of the Ice Bucket Challenge. Carrie and her team have been great in terms of providing additional support in terms of press releases, FAQs, things that they can use on the local front to answer questions, to respond to media needs. But the chapters, we've had regular contact with the chapters all the way throughout this. So we sort of looked at it as a family. We're in this together. And so I don't believe that we've left any of our chapters hanging and not being able to respond to the needs of their constituents.
Even with the enormous growth that you feel there.
Yeah, we're all looking at it together. And so right now we are also in the middle of walk season, and we've seen tremendous lift in our chapters' walks throughout the country. This was the Ice Bucket Challenge. Couldn't have been a better precursor to the walks that have come subsequently. And so it's in all of that, that we're working with them, they're working with us on how they will handle the lift that they've each seen. Now, we do know that some of their donors will also want money to go to research, so they're trying to determine and work that all out with us, or working in tandem with us, so that we make sure those dollars go as the donor intended.
That growth in the walks is important to recognize, because it does show that there's carryover.
Oh, absolutely.
You had the 1.2 million people, the half, who said, I'd like to be engaged. But now you're seeing enormous growth in actual activity and their own individual fundraising around their walking.
Right. I had the pleasure of attending our Pittsburgh walk, which was taking place sort of like right after Labor Day.
I love Pittsburgh. I went to Carnegie Mellon.
Yeah. Well, I love Pittsburgh too. They have great wedding soup. Anyway.
Wedding soup. Yes. That's
right.
I forget what wedding soup is though.
Oh, it's got the.
I remember it. I remember hearing it. Is it like rice balls or something?
Little sausage balls, I think. It's.
Oh, is it sausage?
I think so.
I got a low quality wedding soup. I thought it was rice. Okay.
Well, maybe it could be. I don't know. It just tasted good. So anyway, while I was there to attend the walk, their walk a year ago was 1,600 people.
Yeah.
Their walk this year was over 3,000 people.
That's great.
So, I mean, it's just, and that's just one example of all across the country the way it's been.
We need to take a break. Wegner CPAs. They've got an archive webinar that I entreat you to check out. Prepare your 990 for success. If you're one of the fortunate organizations that is enraptured to complete the full 990, not that pusillanimous EZ or that N postcard even, then listen to Wegner's webinar. Listen to the webinar. It includes common mistakes and most damaging mistakes. You want to avoid those. And how to use your 990 as a marketing tool. We talked about that on the show. That was August 7th, 2015 with Yeet Uchtdoom. So check out the webinar. Go to Wegner CPAs, click resources, then webinars. Now time for Tony's Take Two. Nonprofit Radio at the Nonprofit Technology Conference this very moment as you are listening right now. Not when I recorded. But right now, as you're listening, Friday the 13th, I'm on the exhibit floor, booth 305, recording tons of interviews for future shows. So if you were listening live right now, you're probably not there. Use hashtag NTC to peek in on what's happening for the whole conference. I'll be tweeting as much as I can in between the interviews. And if you want to check out the video, of course, that is at tonymartinetti.com, introducing what I'm doing there. Live listener love, podcast pleasantries, and affiliate affections, it all goes out. The live love goes out, especially on NTC Day. So if you're listening live, the love goes out to you. If you're listening via podcast, one of our over 12,000 listeners through that method, then the pleasantries go out to you. And if you are listening via analog, AM and FM, as it's used to be known, then affections go out to you, our AM and FM listeners. That is Tony's Take Two and the live listener love. Now return to remembering that ice bucket challenge.
Cody, any questions from the web? Any of our sources?
Yeah, we have two questions asked two different ways, and both are about the big money donors. And I think because most people associate social media with a lot of small donations, they're both wondering, you know, what percentage of the overall donors you had fit into that large 10,000 plus group, and how
that was a smaller percentage. You know, think about it. If we can divide these up to call, you know, I would say we're probably each making about, I'm going to guess that, you know, somewhere around the average gift was $45. Carrie's holding up a little thing that says the average gift was $45.
We're exposing everything. Who's behind the camera? The cheat sheets, the cue cards that come up.
But to answer the question about the large donors, we probably had about 100 very large donors.
The 10,000 and above?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Another question? Or that was the same?
That's it for
okay.
now.
Okay. Let's go a little bit to some of the critics that this is slacktivism, narcissism. What do you, I mean, I think the numbers bear out, but I think people are interested in hearing your response.
You know,
to
I got asked about this, criticism. You know, and I'll just tell you, I think that any other nonprofit who was positioned in where we were at the same time that we were would have done the same thing. You know, it's we sent out one email to 60,000 of our donors. That was all we sent, and then from there, you know, again, we had no idea what this would do. And, you know, I think what we've done is a good thing to raise the awareness, the concern for ALS as a disease, raise the awareness level of, you know, not just our organization. There are a lot of ALS or organizations that support ALS in one way or another. So, you know, I don't know that for anybody who can sit and be very Pollyanna and say that they would have just shunned all the awareness and they would have shunned the money, I don't believe it.
Yeah. And some of the criticism is that there's too much awareness now and that will take money away from other worthy causes and
donors,
medical causes.
Donors are smarter than that. People are going to support what they want to support. And if they got into the ice bucket challenge because they kept feeling like somebody kept challenging them, they would have made a small donation, the average of $45, and that would have been it. So, you know, I think that, I just think that the donor population is smarter than that. They're going to give to what they want to give to.
And I am not objective, even though we're in the Chronicle of Philanthropy offices, which is a major journalistic institution. I posted a video on my site that said, you know, congratulations, and let's leave ALS alone. Can we get off that? I called it get off their back. Let's see how they handle it. Maybe they'll do very well. Maybe they'll mess some things up, you know, but let's give you the chance. So I'm not, I think we should raise the critics' voices, but I'm not objective. I think it's magnificent. It's incredible.
Right. And my goodness. I think the other thing too, I just will say this. I think some of the things that played into why did this take off the way that it did? Not only did it start organically, but I also think that the other thing is if you think about what was going on during the month of August in our country and in the world, I honestly believe people were looking for something that they could hang some hope on to.
I'll remind us, I mean, there's the Ukraine.
We had all the stuff going on with the Ukraine. Ebola was starting to come about. We were starting to see hostages being beheaded and with the whole ISIS thing. So I think that there was a lot going on. And sometimes people, you sometimes just need a break from other things that are happening as well. So, you know, I don't want to see any of that stuff go on in our world. But when it was happening, I think that may have played a bit into why did the media pay so much attention to it? Why did other people pay so much attention to it? I think it had to do with they were looking for something else to report besides just always reporting such bad news.
And then there was the stars too. Celebrities did it, George Bush, that helps feed the momentum, of course.
Right, and you know, so we follow up, and we're following up with high potential donors and celebrities to find out what was their reason. I mean, and we have found some connections to ALS from some of them, as we've talked about.
Oh, have you? Oh, say a little. Say a little.
Well, so, you know, in talking with a few of the celebrities, and because they're not ready to
You got to make some pretty cool calls, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You know,
they took your calls.
Yeah, and actually they wanted to talk about ALS because they had a family member who had ALS. And people that were close to them. And we have to remember, our celebrities actually do have a life outside of being a celebrity. And they have family members, they have friends, and they actually grew up from being little people just like we did. And so they have connections to diseases. And ALS is no different than that.
Cody, any web questions?
Oh yeah, we do have one.
Okay.
The question is, I'll just read it verbatim here. From a diversified model, are there any plans for ALS to take, quote, ownership of the Ice Bucket Challenge?
Well, as everybody knows, we did a misstep during the Ice Bucket Challenge. We thought, well, and we did it for the right reasons, even though it was a misstep and we pulled back. Because
well, what was that?
The misstep was is we attempted to trademark Ice Bucket Challenge. We had filled out an application. Our reason for that, though, had to do with the fact that we were learning from families who were involved with ALS that there were some people out developing websites to scam money away from the ALS community for their own. And so we thought about doing that.
Why did that turn out to be
well
misstep?
The backlash from people indicating that we were greedy and everything else, we finally just said, you know, look, we get it. We made a decision we shouldn't have made. Now, as far as owning the Ice Bucket Challenge, that's going to be left to people. That's not going to be, I don't know.
It started organically.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens.
And I don't know about trying to replicate a meme like that. I think that then comes off as phony and
well,
I'm not even sure it's feasible.
Yeah, there's discussion and we'll see where that goes. But, we pay tribute to the roots, organic.
Yeah, I love that part of it too. Any other questions, Webb? Twitter, if you're on Twitter or if you're at TonyMartinetti.com watching, then use Twitter to submit a question and use the hashtag Nonprofit Radio. If you're on the Chronicle site, use the comment section. And if you are on the Google Plus page, use the discussion windows. Cody, got anything?
Yeah, we have one more, and this is a very practical question.
Where's this from?
This comes from the Chronicle site, and this comes from Emily. So she's a grant writer at UC Irvine. Uh-huh. She noticed on the site that the call for research abstracts hasn't been updated for 2015 yet. They have a lot of researchers who are curious to know when the call for proposals will be up. Do you often know when you will have a call for abstracts for the upcoming year?
You know, Dr. Bruins, Lucy Bruins, who is our chief scientist, she and I are in the throes of the plan that's being developed to go to the board. I think there are details to be worked out. Remember, folks, I started June 1. So I'm not even sure what normal timing is. I don't know, Carrie, do you know what normal timing is? So I'm not even sure what normal timing is for when those abstracts have been called for. But what I will say is I would be looking for some announcements around the 1st of November about how the research dollars are planned to be allocated. And I want to come back to that because I think that's an important point. How they're planned to be allocated, and then I think Lucy, Dr. Bruins will be releasing timelines after that. but I want to come back to the word allocated.
why don't we each take a blatant water break? We have water, and we're not going to try to sneak it in. There's no secrets here.
And there's no ice here. We're not pouring it on one another.
Yes, I think yeah.
Thank you for indulging. So anyway, the word allocated is important as opposed to the word spent. I've had some people who, you know, there are a lot of people because of the devastating nature of ALS, the urgency, who would like us just to take all the money and just throw it at the research community. Well, the reality is Emily knows when you're applying for a grant, you don't want to think that your funding source is going to run out of money before your research is done. So when we allocate dollars, we'll be allocating dollars so that if how we go to look at it is if we have a researcher that presents a grant and it's going to be a grant that's a $3 million grant, it's likely going to be a $3 million grant over 3 years. So we're allocating dollars so that we will be able to hold dollars for a research grant so that we know that it will be able to be spent over the course of the lifetime of the grant. So that word allocate as opposed to spend is important. And the other word that's important is sustainability. And it's not about sustainability of my job or Carrie's job, that kind of thing. I'm concerned about sustainability of the funds that are allocated for various research projects or projects that have a lifetime of over 1 year. And that's why we are doing the kind of very thoughtful planning that we're doing, so that we don't find ourselves in a position of being at a new norm, perhaps of a budget of $40 million, and then within 2 years' time, having that new norm go back down to $21 million.
Can we shift to the board a little bit?
Sure.
The board's always,
they're always fine.
It's a hot topic for nonprofits of all sizes. You did talk a little about the fact that they're very involved in the planning process. Do you foresee an expansion of the board because of this at all?
No, we're not going to be expanding the board. You know, we've got, you know, every year we have a certain number of people whose terms roll and they roll off the board. I think probably what it's done is it's allowing us to look critically at some new key people to assess the level of involvement they want to have with our organization.
Oh, so you've met some potential new board members through this.
So, so we're looking at all of that, but, we're not going to go in and take our board of right now 23 people and turn it into a board of 50, because that doesn't make any sense.
We got to take a break. Telos, credit card payment processing, the long tail of passive revenue for you. Think of those local companies that accept credit cards. Who doesn't? And especially if they're already supporting you in some way, encourage them to go watch the video at tony.ma/TonyTelos and figure out whether they would be willing to switch to Telos, and you will get 50% of all the revenue from all those transactions. Tony.ma/TonyTelos. Now back to Barbara Newhouse.
Cody, anything from the web?
Yeah. One quick question from Roger, who asks, what do you think is the biggest challenge in retaining the 1.2 million donors who elected to continue their engagement?
When I say 1.2 million, I'm using a figure that is sort of what I'm looking at is across the board in the country. You know, we know that we have a consistent, just so I can say this, a consistent 500,000 new donors from the online stuff. And looking at what we know and what we're learning from our chapters in terms of new donors who want to be engaged. And that's how we get to that 1.2 million, just so we're clear. What was the question again? Say it one more time.
What is the biggest challenge to retaining those donors?
Biggest challenge to retaining the donors is making sure that we understand their expectations and that we're able to meet their expectations.
And engagement.
Engagement. But that's part of expectations. If they're expecting to be engaged at a certain level, we've got to make sure that we're meeting that. But if they're expecting really to hear from us just a couple times a year, that expectation we need to meet. So it's looking at the expectations and then rising to the level of the expectation that the donor have.
They have, yeah. How has social media planning changed, or social media activity changed?
Well, social media has been nonstop. Twitter, Facebook, all of that has been nonstop. And so actually we've got meetings on Monday to really start taking a look at what our messaging strategy is going to be from this point going forward, and what that looks like in the social media world.
Is that Stephanie?
Stephanie is a key one.
That's who I worked with to meet you.
Yeah. Stephanie should be sainted.
I agree.
She should be sainted.
Saint Stephanie. Stephanie, you were outstanding. Getting me in touch with Barbara and working out the logistics. Thank you, Stephanie.
She should be sainted, because there's another person that worked truly 24/7. In fact,
well, shout that person out. Go ahead.
Well, Stephanie Dufter, our social media person.
Oh, she's the other person besides Carrie, you meant.
Yes.
Oh, I thought.
But
what
my point? No, my point is though is Carrie was going to relieve Stephanie. I'm going to tell this funny story on you. She was going to relieve Stephanie over one.
Yeah, I want to hear the backstory. Yeah. I want to hear the backstory.
So she was going to relieve Stephanie one weekend, and 2 hours into it, she goes, I get a text or a phone call from Carrie. She goes, I don't think I can take this anymore. Like, because it was just so intense. And Stephanie has obviously just the right demeanor and handled it well. Handled it. She's a
Carrie, what was going on? What was going on then?
Just answering a lot of questions. And
the volume? It was the volume that was crushing you?
Volume and just people's passions. Coming,
their intensity.
Coming, their intensity. And okay. Coming through and just, you know, being responsive and respectful and but just keeping up with it.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Just incredible.
I mean, I think we learned, I will also say this. I think we all learned a lot about human behavior during this period of time. You know, if you want the backstory
yeah,
is...
Yeah, now we're getting to the good stuff. It took, what, yeah, 45 minutes or so? All right. Well, what did you learn about human behavior?
Well, the human behavior is, to be honest with you, I found that people, there were a lot of people on the Twitter and on the Facebook that just were pretty rude and unkind. And, you know, there's a difference between being a critic and then being downright rude and offensive.
Yeah, hostile. Because yeah. You were doing so well?
Some of that. Some of that because we weren't just getting money in and putting it out the door. And, you know, some of it, you know, because we couldn't have immediate answers to questions. You know, when you take an organization that is a small organization at 21 million in the national budget, and then you add the chapters in it, we're probably up to 50 million or so. You take an organization like that and dump money coming in the way that it has. If you're wise, you want to say to people, we're going to plan. Now, that would be the wisdom part of it that you would think is common sense. Well, what I've learned is common sense is not common to everyone. And so, you know, Carrie's taken her shots, all the staff taking their shots, but I get, you know, I've had the luxury of being called all sorts of really unkind names, from things that are just vile to things that just were so hurtful. And anybody who knows me knows that I don't process well. And so, you know, I went home in tears a few nights going, I don't believe this. You know, you would think people would want to be nice.
Yeah. There's a double side to social media and
it is.
Unlimited audience engagement. And you suffered yeah. That part, but was a small part.
Yeah, it was a small part. But it was just those people become very vocal. Even though they're small numbers, they become very vocal yeah. on social media yeah. because that's their platform.
More questions, Cody? Was that a...
For now, if you have any wrap-up questions, we have about 4 minutes left.
Oh, okay. Do you have questions?
This question's from Mike. Do you think you would have had more access to the potential donors that did the challenge on Facebook and Twitter if you had managed the engagement on a platform? And I assume by that he means a platform of your own.
I don't know.
That's a tough one. That's all speculation.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure about that. But you know, I think we're engaged a lot with our donors. Now, somehow I feel like I'm losing some of a message here because I don't want you all to think that we are not engaged with our donors, the new donors, because we're very much engaged with them now. But if you're asking for specific strategies on where we're going to go and how we're going to get there, I can't give you that yet.
We have your meeting coming up on
Monday. Exactly.
We'll take the weekend.
Thank you.
We'll meet again on Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
We'll,
okay.
You can report back on Tuesday. I mean, you know, it's we're dealing with enormous scale, and it was dumped on you within 6 weeks or so.
Right. And I'm brand new. I mean, I barely knew some of the – I didn't even know all my board members' names when this all started, barely. Some of them I still will meet for the first time face-to-face in October.
It's October meeting. Thanks for doing this before an October board meeting, too. Thank you. Anything else from the web?
Good for now.
Okay. Just a couple minutes left. What is, and just since June, it's been, what is it that you love about the work you're doing?
Oh, well, my favorite thing about the work that I'm doing are all the people that I meet. Want them to have ALS, but they have enriched my life as I meet individuals with ALS. And I have to admit this, I'm a chapter girl. So I love the work that our chapters do. And I love getting out and seeing what they're doing and being up right alongside them. I love going into our centers of excellence, seeing the good work that our research docs are doing there. So it's just, I enjoy getting out among the people. I'm not very good when I just have to sit in my office because I, well, number one, it's always very busy, but I really like being out with people.
38 chapters to support and be good to.
Right. And they're good to me.
We're going to wrap it up. Barbara,
thank
you very much for coming. Again, they are at ALSA.org. And on Twitter, the ALS ID is at ALS Association.
Next week, Dennis Miller and Strategic Alignment. If you missed any part of today's show, I beseech you, find it on TonyMartinetti.com. We're supported by Pursuant, online tools for small and mid-sized nonprofits, data-driven and technology-enabled, tony.ma/pursuantradio. Wegner CPAs, guiding you beyond the numbers, WegnerCPAs.com. And Telos, credit card payment processing, your passive revenue stream, tony.ma/tonytelos. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Leibowitz is the line producer. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez, and our music is by Scott Stein. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you stuck in a rut? Negative thoughts, feelings, and conversations got you down? Hi, I'm Noreen Sumter, the Potentiator. Tune in every Tuesday, 9 to 10 Eastern Time, and listen for new ideas on my show, Beyond Potential. Live life your way on talkradio.nyc.
Are you feeling unhappy with your body, shape, or size? Ever feel out of control with food? I'm Elizabeth from Nourish the Soul. And on the show, you will uncover the root to these imbalances and discover a permanent solution to having a healthy relationship to food and your body. Join us every Thursday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Are you into comics, movies, and pop culture at large? What about music and TV? Then you're in for a treat. This is Michael Dolce, your host on TalkingAlternative.com. I've been professionally writing comic books, screenplays, and music articles for almost 15 years. Catch my show, Secrets of the Sire, at its new primetime slot, Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and get the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. For more info, go to secretsofthesire.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Leibowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.